It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, we are on the air. Dude, that would drive the producer so crazy if I did vocal fry the whole episode, just like this. She hates that so much. That's how, by the way, that's how you drive a speech pathologist insane, if you're wondering. Is just go around and constantly talk and vocal fry. I don't think it's going to get any better than that. We should probably stop.
Yep, let's do it.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast that won't let me quit.
What was that? Mm.
I think it might have been an homage to the Krusty the Clown episode, the Treehouse of Horror, where Bart can control things with his mind, and one of the things he does is he forces Krusty the Clown to be on the air 24/7. Mm. And he says, so thankful to the little boy who won't let me stop. I was just going for over, in general, demonic, but I think it came out like excitable Krusty the Clown. Anyway, I am alternate universe Tony.
And I am alternate universe William.
It's weird. Normally, when we go around here in our universe, we don't refer to ourselves as alternate universe.
We do not. Because everyone can see our goatees.
We think of you guys as an alternate universe.
Everybody can see our goatees, so they know.
Yeah. Well, and they are, too.
Yeah.
All the people.
That's right. It's pretty obvious.
Alternate universe, everybody. But we don't consider ourselves an alternate universe. We're a universe. You're an alternate universe.
Yeah, but, you know, this is going to be heard in...
Yeah, the demographic is definitely that universe.
Right.
If there is such a thing as a demographic.
It's like we're contractually bound or something to say that we're in the alternate universe.
Yes. As if by some unseen force.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that other unseen force that usually does those kind of things.
Right.
I don't think it's that guy.
No. Naturally not.
It's a weird, like, superhero name. I am unseen force. I'm not invisible, I'm just very seldom here. Most of my superpowers are litigious-based. I will sue you from afar.
Yep, scary. Very scary.
I was disappointed. I caught some of the stuff... no, wait, I can't talk about that. That might put things in a particular time and place that could confuse things.
Yep, we don't want that.
We can't have confusion.
Nope.
For those of you just joining us, it's not usually quite like this. No, I think it's always like this. Anyway, there's a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Did I say dot com?
I don't know.
Dot com.
Okay. Dot com.
Somebody stole the dot com address. And people, I don't know who, some people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics. William, stop it. Be calm. Calm. Calm down.
I'll be .com.
I was in some situation where people were using an acronym that spelled cat, and I wasn't really involved in the conversation, but I was there, and I didn't want to disrupt because it was serious stuff, but anytime they said the word cat, I went meow, just really quiet, so like one other person heard, and they'd say, and then we're going to take the cat, I was like meow. the reason I thought of that is I thought of the Super Trooper scene where the guy keeps has pulled over the guy, the cop pulled over the guys, and they have a bet of how many times he can say meow in the regular conversation. So like, all right, what's going on here, meow? Meow. What we're gonna do is take you outside, meow, and then and so when I was sitting here going, calm down, it made me think of that. Be calm, or you know, dot calm. What was I saying?
I don't know.
People write in with little comments, questions, notebooks, journals. Cocktail napkins. that manifest. No, sorry. The hat,
yeah,
magically,
yeah,
transmogrifies those cocktail napkins into little note cards with the information written on them that manifests physically within the hat itself. We, those other guys, servants, draw out of the hat at random, read it on the air, talk about them until we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the show. So, without further ado, that's not right.
Out of the hat again.
Further ado, not adieu.
Yeah.
That'll be at the end. We'll have further adieu. Dot com.
Coffee. You know, you could turn your head.
Yeah, no, but I'm still got this. I'm worried about the microphone.
You're covering the microphone.
Yes.
So you can turn your head while you cover the microphone?
Eh, what's the point?
I don't understand. Okay, whatever.
All right, coffee.
Because you're not turning away from the microphone. The microphone's coming with you.
That is true. Oh, so you're saying I am turning. I could just do like this.
Or even turn away and do that. See? And you're still not coughing into the microphone. No, you're coughing away from me.
This feels more natural.
Yeah, of course it does. Coffee.
Wants coffee.
If you knew you would only live to 40, well, I'd be dead. That's the end. For me, I'd already be dead.
But
I'd be long dead.
Get the rest of the question.
Oh,
it could affect your dead self.
What would you change in order to live your life as best you could?
This is not normal. I'm going to step outside of bounds a little bit here. Instead of answering it or having you answer, I'm going to answer it for you and say I would suggest you should stop being dead. That's what I would change if I were you.
Great advice.
To make your life better.
Great advice.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard better advice. Pass your lips.
No, see, now I want to mess with this one. If you knew that from the point where you turned 40 onward, at your death, all of that would be erased from the entire timeline.
Wait, what? Wait, say that again. Because I'm not getting.
You can live as long as you live.
I ain't getting what you're laying down. Right. Is that what the kids say?
You will live however long you will live.
Okay.
When you die.
Yes.
The space-time continuum will ripple backwards and erase your entire presence and influence all the way back to the moment you turned 40.
Okay.
And you know this now. So in other words, from 40 onward, your life will literally have no meaning to the rest of the world.
From 40 onward?
Yes.
Meaning what I'm doing right this second.
I'm saying right now, God came down and told you. And told you in his God voice that rings
right,
in your
right.
brain
so
you know it's true.
When I die,
yes.
To the rest of the world, I died when I was 40.
Yes.
So there's nothing I do right now is going to matter.
And what's more, the more I even think about this, this is essentially your dream at that point. It functionally, assuming, if we set aside doubt, because, you know, you can't do it if you're like, maybe that won't really happen. If we set that aside,
yeah,
then this is basically your dream, because anything you do now will not have happened. So you can literally do anything and there will be no consequence to that, eventually.
Except there would be to me.
Well, and that gets a weird thing. So, if you're in a situation where something is going to be erased for whatever reason. Like, we make it smaller. The next 2 days, you can do whatever, and it'll be erased, and you'll start over. If you do something that causes people suffering, how do you feel about that, even if it goes away? Exactly. And, like, you and I both are like, that would still suck.
Yes, yes, it would.
Like, watching those people crying over all those nuns I killed...
Yeah.
Isn't any better knowing that eventually it won't have happened.
It won't have happened, right.
Well, and that's also... that may also partially be a fault of the time travel concept as a whole. Because it's like, what does it mean to not have happened? Like,
yeah,
like,
yep, yep, right, exactly.
Because, yeah, you certainly would... If somebody was like, yeah, you could fuck up these nuns all you want, and we'll just shoot them up with a drug that makes them forget it all. Like, you mean, like, roofie them? Yeah, we'll just do that. So what are you going to do? Nothing.
Yeah.
That's horrible. Yeah. That's what this comes down to. It essentially says, when you die, we're going to give everybody like a 39-year roofie. That's terrible. It's like, not only would I not do anything bad, I just really don't like this plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, that felt weird. I didn't like that at all. Okay, but I'm going to die when I'm 40. That is very soon.
Yeah, you just got a few months.
Yeah, there's like 7 months going on here. First thing, sorry, boss, I quit my job. Just fucking immediately. Because we'll be okay without my income if I just have to live 7 more months. Like, Trish earns enough to keep herself going, and we have enough in savings to provide me 7 months of living. And I really don't want to spend 7.5 hours a day. Not that it's not worthwhile, but no, I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing any more training for anything. I don't want to learn. So I'm quitting my job just immediately. I don't know. I hate to say it, because I always feel like it's dumb, and especially, you know, these are always things like, this wouldn't really happen. The closest you'd get is a prognosis. But even then, you know, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody say you got 6 months to live. You could live 10 more years. You could live 20 more years. You could live 3 months. They're not perfect. So it's already outside the realm there. But if I really know that, I'd probably get kind of bucket listy. I'd probably get into, like, what is some shit that I want to do before I die. I think some, I guess, about my legacy and stuff, like, what can I do now that will do good after me, or that will have important. But there's also just going to be a lot of, like, you know, I've never been to such and such a place. I want to go there. But, of course, the tricky part also is the constant, you know, what money is involved, you know, because I don't want to spend a ton of money and then Trish doesn't have money because she's still going to live, presumably. So that's always when people like, oh yeah, I'm going to travel the world because I only have 6 months. Well, there are health concerns, but there's also, can you afford to travel the world? But let's switch it up for you. So let's match it. You've got 7 months. You have until late January from right now. What are you doing? Probably shortening the series run on that TV show, you're right. Maybe it'd just be of 4 episodes. Finally learn to ride a bike.
Well, what would you change in order
get
to live your life?
Abscess tooth taken out?
Live your life as best you could. Most of the things that I think would be living my life as best I can are the things I do.
Mm.
You know, if I was the kind of person who in the last 7 months, or let's say if the questions changed to 50 for me, if I was the kind of person in that would answer this question by saying, oh, I'd go skydiving, I'd go do this, I'd go that, well, I'd probably already be finding ways to do those things. I wouldn't wait until I've only got a few years to live to do them. I don't have any particular interest in doing those things, even if I only have a few months to live.
So pretty much all the things that you want to do that you can do, you've done? In terms of individual experiences. Obviously, there's ongoing things.
Sure. Like, I mean, I want to go you know, I want to go to Europe, specific places in Europe someday. But if someone said, well, you've got a month to live, I might not think to myself, well, I better go do that.
Okay.
Because I would think to myself, well, I guess I didn't get to do that. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like there's always going to be things I didn't get to do. The more important things are that, you know, I spend time with my family and I say things to people who are close to me that they need to hear.
Now that's interesting, of course, because then the thing is, why are you not telling them that now, if you've got plenty of time to live?
I am, but it's just something that soon I'm going to be gone, and now I say things and I do things with the expectation that I'll also be able to say or do something tomorrow or the next day or the next day after that.
So it doesn't have to be as comprehensive.
Exactly. You know, it's like, but now I might need to say something or do something in a manner that they'll remember because I can't reinforce it from here on out. This is it. You see what I'm saying? So there's that. There's also the fact that, like I said, you always do assume you're going to see somebody the next year. You have to do that. You can't just be living like, I'm never going to see this person again, or you'd want everyone to live in your house and you'd never go anywhere. But now that you know that, okay, this is all I've got, well, then it makes a little more sense for you to maybe spend a little more time with those people than you had planned to spend with them. I would probably start making arrangements for, some of the projects that I'm working on, how they might continue.
Oh, God, you'd be giving me all these half-finished screenplays.
I probably wouldn't, because I know you wouldn't do them.
Good call.
And I wouldn't want you to feel guilty for not doing them, so I would.
I wouldn't.
I would. Yes, you would.
Yes, you would. I wouldn't tell anybody.
But, if I could find ways for certain things
Somebody the other day accused me of not wanting to do things. I almost punched them in the face, but that would have been doing something.
If I thought there was a way that things I was working on could still get done, I would probably make arrangements for that. But I also might decide, okay, well, maybe...
Dear Mr. Wes Anderson.
Maybe about the only way I can do this is, I'll make a... write a series of blogs or make a series of video things or something that
Dear Diablo Cody
people can watch or read after I'm gone, and I'll feel satisfied that, okay, I got it out there, whatever it was, and if nobody reads it, fine, but at least I did it.
Dear Bill O'Reilly.
So probably stuff like that. I know it's all boring and
that's good stuff. I think a lot of people would do that. I can speak to this very directly, but in a much shorter time span. And forgive me if I've spoken about this before. When I was going to have my tonsils out, I was a sophomore in college. Due to weird shit that mostly involved probably imbalances in my medications and also pretty heavy involvement in neo-paganism and doing a lot of weird ritual things and being a college kid, so reading way more into things. Anyway, due to a bunch of weird shit like that, I was relatively convinced that I was going to die in surgery. And what I ended up doing was I wrote some letters. I wrote a letter to my parents, I wrote a letter to the girl I was dating at the time, and I wrote a letter to a friend in school. The hilarious thing is I don't remember what I wrote in any of them. But I wrote them, sealed them up, and I waited until just before I was going into surgery to tell, I guess, my mother that, because I didn't want to spend, like, the whole day beforehand being like, oh, I'm pretty sure I'm going to die in this. But I had to tell her, like, there's some envelopes, you should go get them, kind of thing. And then the not hilarious part, but interesting and coincidental one, was this is also the surgery that seemed to go perfectly fine and then went horrible and was 48 hours of hell and where I super almost died on multiple occasions. And in fact, during my blood-drained confusion when it was first starting off. I actually said out loud as they're all running around me trying to fix things, saying, I guess I was just gonna die just afterward. And my mother's in the room and she's trying desperately not to bawl. Because I'm in actual danger of dying as I'm saying this. But, that made what you were describing for doing reminded me of that, because that's sort of what I was like, there was stuff that needs to be said to them if I go. I was surprisingly calm about it. Like, it wasn't like that night I was like, oh, I gotta, you know, eat more ice cream or some shit. I'm sure I ate plenty of ice cream. But.
When I was in high school, I probably said this before, but there was a guy who gave me a nickname, Mr. Doomsday, because he thought that, you know, every time
he kept wearing that sandwich board said the end is nigh.
He observed that I seemed to attract conversations that about death.
You know, that's like, a lame nickname for that,
I guess. But like, you know, we'd be riding home from a basketball game or a band trip or something, and a whole bunch of us would start talking, and ultimately it'd be about, you know, death, I guess.
Here comes Debbie Downer.
It wasn't my fault. It really wasn't.
That's what he said to Jim McGregor.
But that's the reputation I got. And so somehow, this question was floating around my circle of friends about, well, if you knew you were going to die in the next 2 days or whatever, what would you do? And just about everybody said, well, they'd go to have sex. Even people I was surprised to hear that from, like, you know, like young women who kind of made a deal out of how they were going to save themselves from marriage stuff. But if they're going to die tomorrow, oh, they're going to have sex.
And these are all teenagers, right?
Yeah.
All right.
And I asked them, why? I mean, well, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to die never having experienced that. I just thought that was like the weirdest thing. It's like, what? There's 1,000 things you're not going to experience before you die. Why? What's so important about that one?
The vast majority of teenagers think sex is the best thing in the world.
Have you ever done it?
Yeah, no, even then. Yeah. To be fair, most teenagers who think that and then do it don't change their mind.
That's interesting. Well, anyway, I thought...
Well, at least if they did it decently. Sometimes your first time sucks.
I thought it was really an odd
answer. A couple of my first times were very disappointing, and others were good.
I thought it was an odd answer. It's like, what? You're not, you know, you're not going to spend time with family, or you're not going to get your, you know...
Gross, you can't have sex with family.
You know what I mean. It's like, I just thought it was a strange thing to answer. I was really surprised how many people that was the first thing on their minds. And I'm not sure it was because they really wanted to have sex. I think it was because it seemed there was a status thing about it.
Yeah, I do think there was a percentage of that. There was a percentage of kids who were not obsessed with sex and did not think sex was necessarily the best thing in the world, but they thought they were supposed to.
Yeah, yeah.
But most of them just did.
But they weren't really reflecting on the question. They were just giving a quick answer. It's like, you know.
And also. Most teenagers aren't going to get really thoughtful. They're going to give whatever they think is the funniest line.
No, they weren't being funny. They were being dead serious. I couldn't understand it.
He said chillingly. Now I'm picturing this muted gray school bus. It's like, if you were going to die tomorrow, what would you? And the kids are like, I would have sex.
It wasn't my fault.
I would have sex.
It wasn't my fault that these conversations went this
Ingmar
way.
Ingmar Bergman's talk on the way back from band camp.
Okay.
Deadly serious. I want to make a movie about this now.
But they were serious. Like, oh, this is absolutely what I do. It's like they didn't even have to think about it. Like, they'd already thought about it. Like, if someone told me I was going to die in 2 days, this is what I do. Like, this was already on their minds. I just thought that was weird. And again, for a lot of them, I don't think it's really because they cared so much about sex as they thought that there's...
That's what the deal was.
Yeah, there'd be something wrong with them or deficient about them if they died without doing this.
Mm-hmm.
That's so weird. That's a weird thing to think to me. It was weird then, and I still think it's weird. but I don't know.
I'm unsurprised you feel that way. However, I am completely unsurprised by the reaction you described of them. I suspect that's what would have happened on my school bus, too. And I probably would have answered the same. I don't know if I'd be one of those kids that believed it or not. I probably wouldn't have believed it. I probably would have been one of those kids who thought that's what I was supposed to say.
Well, see, another thing is, I guess I don't really get bucket lists. I don't really get it. I mean, I understand the general concept of, you know, when you're about to die or at the end of your life, and you look back on it, you want to feel like you lived it, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But to me, they're living your life is a day-to-day thing. It's not, oh, I did this thing, and then I did this thing, and I have this list of things I did. I mean, so if someone says, well, okay, you're going to die in a couple days, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of things I didn't get to do that I'm sorry I didn't get to do, but I'm still most interested in maybe turning up the volume on some of those day-to-day things.
Yeah.
That I'm not going to be able to do.
Very few people measure their self-worth in their normal stuff.
But that's where their self-worth is, though. Stuff.
That's not what most people think.
But do you think that's true?
I
mean, how much...
I have weird issues with the concept of self-worth.
No, okay, so. Okay, but I mean... I do too. I mean, we're using that term for lack of a better word.
Do I think there is more value in climbing up to Waimea Canyon on Kauai than there is in doing the dishes? No. But I do understand the desire. And I say that consciously. I say that rationally thinking about it now. I can fall victim to it too, though. Things that are more interesting seem to be of more value. And the person who does more interesting things seems to be...
More interesting to who? I mean, there's a
to
value judgment.
Either yourself or to who you perceive to be the one who gets to decide that
it
stuff.
Just seems to beg
that's the thing. You have no... You can't relate to peer pressure, and that's part of the thing. You don't get peer pressure.
Oh, peer pressure.
Yeah. Pretty much everything we're talking about in that context is a manifestation of peer pressure, which can even be internalized. You can be pressuring yourself because you believe that's what society wants you to do, yeah. Or because you're emulating someone else. Do you remember the most interesting in the man in the world commercials?
You know what?
The Dos Equis commercials.
I didn't see them, but I saw these memes and I kind of figured out. Oh, this is related to some kind of commercial with this guy in it.
Yeah, this guy is the most interesting man in the world, and he doesn't always drink beer, but when he does, he drinks Dos Equis, and so then you're supposed to drink Dos Equis beer because the most interesting man in the world does.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bit. And the most interesting man, you see him doing a lot of things. You see him meeting a lot of people. You see him climbing mountains. You see him in lots of very lifestyles of the rich and famous looking things. And all the bits are mostly about... it's a lot of reversals. Like, these famous hearers or whatever fantasize about being him or, you know,
mm-hmm.
things like that. One time he had an awkward moment. He didn't care for it and never had one again and stuff like that. And they say he's the most interesting man in the world, and you're supposed to want to be that.
Hmm. Okay.
And so I think people think, but I mean, the philosophy, the true philosophy, I think, behind the bucket list is there are things that people want to do to some degree or another that they put off for a variety of reasons.
That aren't good reasons.
No. It frequently comes down to laziness or
fear of what other
insecurity
people
or
yep.
something like that.
Yep, yep.
But a common rationale somewhere in there is I'll get to it. I'll eventually do it.
Yeah.
And so the idea is, well, pretend you didn't have it eventually.
Yeah.
You want to do it? If you do it because you were only living for a week and this was your only chance and it's important enough that in that week you do it.
Mm.
Then fucking do it now,
yeah, right.
because there's no reason not to.
That's right, that's right.
In certain situations.
That's right.
There's other ones where it's like, if I knew I was dying in a week, I would sell my house and go do this thing. Well, you're not dying in a week. Well, then I can't fucking sell my house. So I can't afford to go do
right.
it. So shut up.
Right.
But, I mean, right. that's the thing. It's supposed to be an a perspective issue. What is shit that you say I'll get to eventually that you really do want to do, because maybe you should just do that. Not just because you could get hit by a bus tomorrow, but because if it's something you want to do, you'll probably like it and it'll enrich you. So why wait?
Well, you know, my my father, you know, my father's father was killed in a farm accident when I was 2 years old. And my father, he survived the accident overnight. My grandfather did.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad went to see him, and the hospital said, well, come back tomorrow. You know, he's mm-hmm. he's not well enough to talk to. And of course, he died overnight. And, you know, that had an incredible impact on my dad.
Of course.
And it had an impact on our whole family. I mean, for one thing, for a long time, if we were ever in any kind of accident and we had to go to the doctor, Dad would drive us to a hospital, you know, 45 minutes away in Des Moines rather than go 20 minutes to Knoxville, because he was never going to take anyone to that hospital again. But another thing was, Dad, from as early as I can remember, would constantly tell us, don't wait to tell people things. Don't wait to do things.
Yeah.
Don't tell yourself you're going to do something or such and such someday. If you know someone who's in their 70s and you think, oh, I'm going to go visit so-and-so one of these days, don't do that. Go visit them, because you don't know how long they'll be with us or whatever. And then my mom's dad, you know, he had a really tough life. His mom died when he was really young and stuff. And he was constantly telling us, life is so short. You think it's not going to be, you know, but it's going to go by so fast. So don't ever wait on things. So on my both on my mom's side and my dad's side of the family, we had these relatives who would constantly take the time to take us kids aside and tell us, don't wait on things. And it's probably one of the reasons why I live my life the way I do, is because I've just got this sense that I'm going to run out, you know, and that's going to happen sooner than later. So I just had it drilled into my head. Don't wait. Don't put things off. Don't wait to say things to people that you care about. Don't wait to do the things that you want to do in life. Don't let society or people telling you can't do it, don't let those things discourage you from doing certain things. And
that is not a message that has been given too much of society, or at least has not sunk in. And a large part of the evidence of that is that is the moral of so many movies and stories and things. And it keeps being there because it's a daydream fantasy.
Yeah, that's right.
We imagine being the kind of people who lived that way.
But see, those stories had a different impact on me than on my peers, because those stories were reinforcing what my family was telling me. But for all of my peers, they were, like you said, there's fairy tales. Because
their parents aren't doing
that's
it.
That's right. That their parents aren't doing it.
My dad goes to a job he hates. He spends more time there than he spends at home.
And their parents aren't telling them to do it.
No.
Everybody, the whole world, their teachers, their parents.
Well, and it's back and forth. Sometimes they do, but even then it's in a vacuum. If you're telling me that and I'm like, you're clearly not doing that, I'm not going to take it. And that's the thing. All these movies tell us, and people would say, you watch that movie, what was the lesson? The lesson is you got to believe in yourself. You got to do the things. Don't waste time. Life is short. And they'd say, do you believe in that? And almost all of them are going to say, yes. And like, do you do that? And they're always going to be, I could do it better, is what they say, which means no.
Yeah.
But we like to go to these movies and we fantasize about being proactive in our own lives.
That is a
common fantasy. I do it when I learn new things on like how to be more efficient at work and stuff like that. Some of them stick and some of them don't. But I do a lot of, imagine I was the guy who actually did it that way, who actually kept his desk clean, you know,
well,
who actually kept his house clean.
Another aspect of this, though, is that there are things that I know my parents didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do them because, well, they had 5 kids.
Mm.
And
then that gets weird, so it's your fault?
Well, no.
That is a dynamic that happens a lot.
Yes, that's true. For me personally, and I don't know how it impacts my siblings, but for me personally, that was just their choice. I mean, it wasn't my fault. That's just what they chose to do, and that's fine, and I respect that choice.
Which is accurate.
But I also ran it through my head, well, what would life have been like for me if they did these things they wanted to do? and it always seems like it wouldn't have been that bad. In fact, if, let's say we had less money, okay, yeah, maybe we would have had less money, but they would have been happier, and that would have been better. You know what I mean?
Well, and it, so there's a good chance a lot of things they wanted to do, you also would have been involved
in. That's exactly right. So when I sort of run it back in my mind, again, they chose that, and I respect that. But for myself, I decided, you know what, I'm going to practice what they're preaching. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do what they say and not necessarily what they do. And I'm going to live my life this way. And
most people don't, I think, have that option most of the time. And to a degree, you have this for the other stuff. You internalize how they're living.
Your parents?
Yes.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I mean, there are exceptions frequently, especially if it's an abusive situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes still that happens, just on a less conscious
that's
level.
That's right, that's right.
But, like, I grew up intentionally not, like, we lived fairly austerely for our bracket. Mm-hmm. Like, we could have had nicer things. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm not going to say we were poor by any stretch and that we didn't have cool stuff. But in general, well, that was the thing. My relatives bought the cool stuff. We frequently would have their hand-me-downs. I would have my cousin's hand-me-downs because they were like 2 years old and they were really nice clothes and stuff. So I would get those. I was always slightly behind the trends. But like our relatives would buy really snazzy furniture. And then when they replaced it, they'd give us the old stuff. So we had some good stuff. But my parents saved the money. Part of it involved helping the kids go through college. Part of it, a big part of it, involved traveling. They liked to travel. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we didn't have the nicest stuff. Meanwhile, when I was young, we went to Europe for a month.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like that kind of stuff. And I grew up with that same mindset.
Yeah.
In very recent years, I'm realizing that that's not necessarily what I believe or how I want to live exactly. Mm. I still like to travel. There's plenty of stuff I could be buying I didn't. But there's a lot of things. There's also a style of travel that my parents did where you're really absorbing the culture and getting in there. Whereas I'm finding, you know what? The one where I just go to some place and they pamper me like I'm a goddamn millionaire for a week. I don't get a lot of culture. I like it. And it costs money. But I'm okay with that. Like, and that's a silly example, but those are the kind of things. Like, I'm finally hitting the age now where I'm like, do I want to live like they lived? And sort of look at what are the fundamental concepts. Although my parents being very communicative, especially my mom, it's not like I came up with this is how my parents chose to live. In addition to witnessing it, my mom told me about it a lot. She frequently would describe their life philosophies to me.
So yeah, my parents did too.
I feel like we're unusual a little bit.
You think that's true?
I feel like for most people, it's just you occasionally get some weird life advice when they've had too much wine or something.
Oh.
But yeah, I don't know. Tell us about that. Tell the other guys. We don't care.
Yeah,
go to the blog. Tell us, did your parents describe to you a lot their life philosophies and things? I feel like I got less politics than a lot of people. I did get some. I definitely knew my parents' political views. I knew who they were voting for, all that kind of jazz.
I didn't know anything about my parents' politics at all.
Trish's parents were a little bit like that. Her dad in particular had a really big thing about never telling anyone, I assume including his spouse, who he voted for.
That was kind of a big deal, yeah.
And, I mean, I suspect we could guess with relative precision.
Sure, sure, sure.
But he was just like, that's...
Yeah, my parents were
decidedly a personal thing. Like, and it's supposed to, he didn't want to know who anybody else voted for either.
If they took us to the polling place and we were waiting for them to come out, who'd you vote for? Well, that's private.
Yeah,
that's what they'd say.
And my family never. Maybe that's a Midwestern thing. I don't know. Because my parents, I knew going in, and I also knew because up until 16, I never disagreed with my parents on any political issue. But also up until I was 16. My parents never disagreed with each other on any political issue.
Wow, yeah.
That was a huge day when I found out they had different opinions. And I don't even remember if it was the same issue or something around that time, but when I realized I disagreed with them as well. But I totally knew, and that was the thing. And I voted, you know, spoilers here, I didn't vote till I was 18. But I really did, because, you know, every elementary school, when it was a presidential election, we had a mock vote. Sure, sometimes sure. We even had mock debates and stuff. So I voted every single one. I voted for the same people my parents did, and the same measures and everything.
Really?
Always. Because as a kid, they knew. In my mind, they were the font of wisdom. Like, they were the ones who knew the right answers. It wasn't until puberty I figured out they were idiots.
They weren't idiots.
No, when I was, like, 20, I figured out they weren't idiots. Oh, but I see, in between.
Well, I mean,
No, I was bad for that. Every kid has that phase. Well, you probably didn't, but every other kid has that phase where for a little while their parents just can do no right and are complete idiots. But whereas for most teenagers it's a year or two, somewhere between age 13 and 19, for me it was the entirety of age 13 through 19. And I even had the self-awareness to know I was doing it and couldn't stop myself. Mm-hmm. I would even tell them, I get that this is me being a teenager, you're still really stupid.
No, I never went through anything like that with my parents, but...
Even the really nice Mormon girl had about 6 months where she was really bitchy to her parents. I saw her do it.
Mom and Dad would talk to us about just about everything other than politics. I mean, philosophical discussions, religion, just name it. But politics, not so much. And so there were a lot of... we watched the evening news. Until I left home when I was 18, I watched, like 2 hours of news every single day, basically.
I don't ever remember watching news. I remember people watching the news, and I'd be in the same room,
And for all that time, I understood almost none of it. I didn't know what was going on, why it was going on. And I knew I didn't understand it, but I didn't ask my parents, and they didn't offer to tell me. You know, there wasn't any kind of... I presumed they understood it. I didn't know when I would ever understand it, but I didn't. I didn't get anything that was going on.
Had I been paying any attention to it and I didn't understand it, I would have immediately asked my parents, and my parents would have explained it to me.
Which is weird, because I asked my parents any other question, but when I'm talking about political things, that's mostly what was on TV. If it was some political thing I didn't understand, I didn't even ask.
Oh, no.
I don't know why, because I asked about everything else.
I hated Ronald Reagan. And I knew exactly why I hated Ronald Reagan.
I didn't have any opinion about any of that stuff.
Nowadays, I don't hate Ronald Reagan anymore. To be fair, I don't know that my parents hate Ronald Reagan anymore either, because they've grown and changed. Mm. And also, we've seen things since then that are so much worse. All right. That took up most of our time, but we could do another question.
Okay.
That's unusual for us. We usually draw more than that. But apparently this sparked something.
Coffee usually asks questions that get us going for a long time.
Ooh. This is from Stu. It's easy to be depressed about polarized politics. Sorry, I should do this in a Welsh accent. No, okay. It's easy to be depressed about polarized politics, global conflicts, climate change, wealth disparity, etc. What good things are happening?
Well,
damn it, I wanted to see how long we could make that silence go.
No, there's a lot of good things happening. There really is. I think I sent a video out recently to you. I don't know if you looked at it, but... where a guy who, now I'm forgetting his name, but anyway, he works with Star Wars a lot, and he was talking about the decision to, this decisions to cast the recent Star Wars movies a certain way. Like, for example, one thing he said was, so we've got this new Star Wars film coming out, and it's a female lead. And so we get people responding to that, oh, so you're going to have another one with a female lead. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, he's a guy who's in the middle of all this development for all this new content, and you kind of wonder is it an accident that they're having female leads, and if people complain enough about it, will they stop doing that? I mean, what's really going on behind the scenes here? But no, it turns out they're being very deliberate about this, and the people who are complaining about it, they think, you're a bunch of idiots. Shut up. We're just going to keep doing what we're doing. And that was so encouraging to know that it's not an accident, this gender parity they're putting in these things. They're deciding, you know what, we're going to do this. It's the mm-hmm. right thing to do. And if anyone complains about it, well, that's their problem. That's cool to know that in the development of this huge franchise, in this huge studio, Disney, that's what they're thinking and that's how they're approaching it. And I think that's good. In a lot of countries where bad things are happening, I was just thinking about this today. Yeah, that's bad that's happening. But people are protesting it. You know, people are out in the streets in those countries opposing it. News organizations are reporting it. So it's not just happening. It's not just happening and nobody's pushing back. Recently, a bill passed in the House unanimously that was focused on enhancing our digital privacy. Passed in unanimously in the House. I don't know how it's going to go in the Senate, but that's encouraging that that happened. And there's a lot of social movements that are growing. Maybe they're not growing as fast as we would like them to, but social movements about around food and food production, regenerative agriculture, which is an agriculture that is aiming...
Makes you look younger.
That's aimed at not just sustainability. I mean, because that's a thing that people say. Well, we want sustainably this stuff to be sustainable. Well, actually, we need something a little better than that right now, because if we just sustain what we've got, that's not good enough. We have to do things that are regenerative. And so there's some regenerative farm practices that are out that are actually going to help bring some of the effectiveness and the fertility of the soil back, but also bring back some of its carbon, its ability to trap carbon. And there are some scientists who are looking at these strategies and saying, you know what, if we enacted enough of these, we actually could start to reverse some of the effects of global warming, not just mitigate them like a lot of people are talking about now. So there's that stuff that's out there. There's a lot of things in STEM in terms of getting kids in general interested in science and technology, which I think is a positive thing, not just for our economy and stuff like that, but a positive thing for teaching kids critical thinking and things of that nature, but also in terms of getting more women involved in it so that we can get more parity in the workplace there. There's just all kinds of, if you are an advocate for certain causes and you get, you know, news updates from people that are doing these things, sometimes you can get a lot of bad news from them, like, oh, we have to fight this, call your senator or sign this petition. But there's also the fact that, A, this organization is out there. B, these petitions are getting signed by thousands of people. And C, sometimes these petitions and these things actually get things through as far as legislation goes. And the awareness is increasing and the movements are increasing. I'd say there's a lot of good things going on out there. And that's not even taking into account the fact that when you watch the news and you get all this bad news, you know, sometimes you forget that, you know, if you look out into your town, household for household, you know, there are families enjoying themselves in those homes, you know. There are people talking about their day and laughing and having a good time. That's what's happening in the world for most people most of the time. I mean, you have to have that perspective and realize it's not all doom and gloom. Now, for me, that makes it all the more important that the people in some other part of the country that are having bombs dropped on them, that shouldn't be happening to them, you know. But it is comforting to know that there's more good things happening in the world now every day than bad things. But we definitely should know what those bad things are, and we definitely should be doing things to stop them. And we shouldn't get discouraged, because I think there is hope for our planet. I think there's hope for humanity. I think we're nowhere close to being past the point of no return. You know, I just think there's a lot of good things happening, and I'm very optimistic. And that's why a lot of times on the podcast, I feel bad about talking about the bad things that are happening, because it seems like the good things don't get equal time, you know?
I would say you definitely talk more about the bad stuff.
Yeah. But
I just saw a picture the other day of Captain Planet and realized he had a bright green mullet.
Captain Planet?
Mm-hmm.
A bright green mullet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And at the time, we were all fine with that.
That's the main thing. Not that he had a mullet, but that nobody called him on it.
I had a mullet in the mid-90s.
I never had a mullet.
I mean, I didn't think it was a mullet.
Yeah, yeah.
I was growing out my hair, but only in the back because it would be too crazy up in front.
Sure. You had business up front.
Exactly. Nobody said a word. People were envious. Other people started doing it because of me.
It's a thing people did. Yeah, right.
And Captain Planet did it, and his was green. Mm. Terrifying. Sorry, that was off topic. But you started to sound a little bit like one of the speeches they would give at one of the end of those episodes, so it made me think of it.
At the end of... Oh, those
episodes. Where Captain Planet, where they talk, Planeteers talk about the importance of everybody being good and shit like that. Whoopi Goldberg told him some stuff. I don't remember. she was Gaia, the spirit of the earth.
Okay.
Whoopi Goldberg. Okay, so what are the good things? Odd Couple's getting a third season.
I didn't know they had a second one.
They got the second one right now. All might be over by now.
Well, but everyone can think of good things in their own life. Everybody can, I'm sure.
They're not in my... I don't hang out with those guys.
Well, Stu, I'm sure can, and you can if you sat and thought about it. There's lots of good things.
I'm not Welsh.
But, you know, you've got a great marriage, you've got some great coworkers, you're content in your job. These are all great things. And there's
Wait, so you're going to take my answer, too?
I'm just saying.
I'm saying good things now. You said your good things. No, I'm saying good things.
You're being silly about it, though.
That's a good thing.
It seems like a serious question, that's all.
Does it really?
It does, kind of.
They always seem like a serious question to you.
Maybe.
If we take it outside of that realm, then it all gets a little silly to me, because some people are going to think some things are good, and other people are going to think those things are bad.
I suppose that's true, sure.
So, to me, even if I talked about the things in the world that were good, it's the stuff that's in the world that is good to me.
Sure, that's right.
Also, I really don't know what the hell I would cover at this point. you covered most of the big ones out there. I'm personally pleased that transgenderism is finally getting some notice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's becoming more mainstream. I appreciate that. My brain does it, though, every time. Something like that. Even when you were saying your good things, I'm like, yeah, but... and this is here. I'm like, I'm so glad that transgenderism's been doing that. I'm like, yeah, but then North Carolina's a big fucking asshole. I hadn't realized, so... I forget her name, but there's a woman... who has a music group called Against Me.
Okay, I don't know anything about
it. And that. I'm not even sure if it's a group. That might just be like her and her mix. I don't know. But anyway, yeah. That and well, she was notable because when North Carolina passed that horrible law, a bunch of people said, we're fucking boycotting North Carolina. Bruce Springsteen canceled a concert.
Yeah,
somebody else canceled a performance.
Yep, yep.
And this woman... I wish I remembered her name. The band is called Against Me, with an exclamation point at the end. Said, no, I'm still going. Because we're going to go there, and the concert will be a protest.
Okay.
So we're going to do it. And she really went with it. What I didn't realize, I should say that, she went with it, and in fact, on stage, burned up her birth certificate. Saying, now I have no gender.
Oh, wow.
What I didn't realize before this is apparently she's a trans woman. I had no idea.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No. And I mean, it doesn't change. It's interesting. It doesn't, you know, doesn't make it any better or worse
right.
But I hadn't known that. But it, in some ways it makes it braver. She's like, no. Because they're all like, no, I'm not canceling the tour in that state where they're treating people horrible. And she's like, no, I'm not canceling my tour in that state where they're going to treat me horrible.
Right.
Like, that's a little more freaky. All right. I think that's about it.
Okay.
I'm going to wrap it up. So, if you hear from those guys, tell them we're tired of doing this shit and they should find a different universe to do. You think, are they the good universe or are they like a middle universe And there's another one on the other side that's, like, super good. Like, is there a William that not only doesn't take pennies without leaving pennies, but just leaves pennies always?
I imagine so, yeah. I have no
idea. What sort of facial hair recognition method do you think they have? Now I picture their entire face is just furry, except where a goatee would be.
I think
is bare.
I think in the universe,
like, even their eyes are furry.
I think in the universe where William always leaves a penny, no matter what, he doesn't have any eyebrows.
And nobody else either.
No, nobody has eyebrows there.
Tony has no eyebrows. Mm. I cannot imagine Tony in the good universe. Like, I straight up can't picture that. I feel like he has to have a different name, even.
Surely he exists there, though. Yeah? I mean...
Oh! Like, it's so good. Tony, not even there. Like, what is the moral opposite of me? Just air.
So, I can be evil, but you can't be good. Is that what we're doing?
Apparently. Apparently.
All right, then.
Well, I think we've established the only difference between evil and other Tony now is extra facial hair. So.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just a clean shaven. It's still the same. It's exactly the same clean shaven.
Okay.
Tony is constant. Tony's morality is unchanged throughout the spectrum of existence.
Just how much facial hair.
Which means, yeah, it's only how good or bad the facial hair is. And it's obviously inversely proportional. The more facial hair, the more evil. But yeah, so Tony's actions are outside of morality. Anytime a Tony does something, it neither increases or decreases the good in the world.
There's something really appropriate about that.
I feel, and I think I like this idea. I think I'm going to run with this idea.
Okay, good.
I think it's going to be my leading defense at my next arraignment.
Oh, okay.
I am all over this. So anyway, you guys go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us how evil you are, or what's good in your world. Are your cats that are alive still alive? I didn't want to mention they're dead cats, because they aren't alive, and then they'd feel bad.
Yeah.
But the ones that are alive, are they still alive? Tell us. Also, like them on Facebook, because it gives them a cheap thrill. And listen, next week, hopefully they'll be back, because I am sick of this shit.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.